Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we're going to be talking about resurrection. Everybody's got some resurrection they want to do or need to do, I know that. But depending on whose hand is on you or what about you is dead, you have the power or opportunity to be resurrected or brought back to life. Do you guys remember the old school sermon from Ezekiel 37 about the dry bones of the valley? Well, that used to be one of my dad's favorite sermons. Benches were guaranteed to rock when he or any other preacher preached that sermon. It was kind of hard to mess it up. If you were preaching and preached that sermon and messed it up, it was probably time to sell vacuum cleaners or something. All right, collectively and individually, we have dry bone moments in our lives, and likewise, we have opportunities and moments of resurrection. Join us tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as we discuss the resurrection. How you doing tonight, Robert?
Leon, I like your topic because it's very poignant and apropos for the times in which we live. And I would like to chime in on that because I'm one of the belief that we are constantly resurrecting ourselves. And you have to, that old saying, if a man die, will he live again? Yeah. All the days of my appointed time, I wait on my change to come. I think it was Job that said it. In the book of Job, and that is so what we have to go through throughout our lives. You have to really die several times in your life. We think of this finality of death, and that's it, and we go to heaven or hell or where we decide to go. But we have to give up the ghost, really, throughout as long as we're on this earth living, because it depends on what phase of life we're in. A man goes from a baby to a boy to adulthood. You can't be the same in each one of those phases. Even if you don't die completely, you have to let one of those phases go in order to get to the next. Sure, there's some overlapping, there's some concentricity, but I am so into what you're saying because it's been one of my core beliefs as we meander through this life as we go from birth to our final resting place, then we have to go through this series of resurrection. So I'm on board with that thought.
Thank you, brother. See, I knew this would be your topic. Because you're the marketing pulpit guy. You see businesses die, businesses resurrect. You see people go through, of course, all of us, like you just said, have been through some moments where we needed to be resurrected mentally, spiritually. I know I have. And,
Leon, it also brings up the point that we shouldn't fear death when we understand that death is the beginning of a new beginning. It's not the end, it's a beginning. And so when we look at it in that context, then we should be looking forward to that next phase of development, that next ascension. We're going to a higher place, physically, mentally, spiritually. So, yes, let's go ahead and let that old us die so the new us can come in and take its place.
That's right. You know, I'm going to move into Joe in a minute. I see he's in. He's clocked in. But I'll say this before I forget again. People ask me often, what can I do to start a nonprofit? What can I do? What should I do? How can I do it? And always, my response is always, almost always, you got to be born again. Because if you're not sincere about this, you can't be the same person you were, I promise you, if you're expected to be successful. You got to drop all of your selfishness, if you have any of that about you. All of you, be ready to sacrifice the time you want to spend with some of your loved ones, want to spend at the beach, or wherever you like to spend your time. You just have to know, unless your nonprofit is a beach resort. I understand that. You just have to know you have to be born again. Welcome to the show tonight, Joe. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, Leon? What's going on, Robert?
Hey, Joe. How you doing, bro?
Curtis on here?
Curtis not on here yet.
Okay.
When he gets here, we'll blow the trumpet.
Yep. But anyway, thank you for your insight, Leon, in bringing attention to this subject on this very timely time right here on the eve of, almost the Good Friday, and to talk about the resurrection. You know, it's a message I give people all the time. People tell me when they're in a slump in their business and they feel like they're about to go under. And what I tell them, and I tell myself the same thing from time to time, I say, what you need to do is start over.
Mm-hmm.
What you mean start over? I say, you know, you just act like when you go to your job or to your office or to your business, you act just like this is the first day. In other words, you're going to do the same things. You're better equipped to do what you need to do now because you have more tools than you did, you know, when you first started the business. In other words, what you are doing is being resurrected. You know, you come to a point of burnout. You don't have the same enthusiasm that you had, you know, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. So you got to think about what you did to get you started in the first place. And there are things that you must do in order to accomplish that. Now, when Jesus was getting ready to go into Jerusalem, because we all know that's where Jesus met his final fate before the scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests. And he told, he asked his disciples, who do you say that I am? And of course, there are several of his disciples. Well, some say Elijah, some say this person and that person. But Jesus asked the disciples, well, who do you say that I am? And then, of course, and then Peter responded by saying that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, well, flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you, but it was, through the Spirit. And then right after that conversation, that's when Jesus told his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem. And then in the next few minutes, Peter turned around and told Jesus, well, because he's told his disciples he must go to Jerusalem to suffer many things. In other words, he knew that they were going to scourge him. He knew that they were going to whip him. He knew that they was going to make him carry his cross, and he knew they were going to nail him to the cross. He knew they were going to pierce him in the side. He knew that they were going to put nails through his feet. He knew all of that. But he still said, I must go to Jerusalem. And so Peter said, you know, well, if you know all that's going to happen, why are you going there? Why don't we go fishing? Why don't we go have another fish fry?
I'm with Peter on that.
Why don't we have another party, go down there and make some more wine or something? Why go to Jerusalem? But he wasn't paying close attention to Jesus. Jesus said, I must go. And that resonates with me in that when there are things that we must do in order to achieve some objective, sometimes it's not going to be pleasant. Sometimes it's not going to be pleasant, and sometimes we have to do things for the ultimate good. In other words, we got to sacrifice ourselves. In other words, we got to pick up our own crosses. In other words, we got to suffer sometimes to get to where we want to get to. If you're going to be successful in life, you can't always do what's comfortable. Sometimes, even though I know this is not comfortable, I might have to stay up late at night, and I might have to get up early in the morning, but it's not comfortable. This is what I must do in order to accomplish a goal. And then, of course, without Jesus suffering, without him going to the cross and doing what he had to do, there would have been no resurrection. And because Jesus did what he must do, that now we have the strength and the courage to do what we must do. Because now that when we are alone and we're by ourselves, and because Jesus did what he must do, now we have someone we can call on in our darkest hours when we're sick, when all of our friends have abandoned us, when the bill collectors are calling us and we don't know what to do. There's a place that we can go, and that's to Jesus because of the resurrection. And that's why so many things are going on in the world, because we are not doing what we must do in order to correct these things. It's like voter suppression, for example. There are some things we must do in order to stop that. Child abuse and discrimination and racism. There are some things that we must do in order to accomplish those things. And because of what Jesus did and because of the resurrection, he gave us the example that everything is not going to always be pleasant. There are some things we must do to get to where we want to go.
Yeah, I think, Joseph, to add to that, people like Dr. Martin Luther King understood some of those things that must happen.
Right.
They knew back then they must go get the whoop, you know, that they were going to have to get some more redneck. They did it. And because of that.
Just like Dr. Martin Luther King, he said that, he wasn't worried about what happened to him. You know, he said, man, I've gone to the mountaintop and I looked over and I seen the promised land. So basically what he was saying was he knew that when he went to Memphis, when he knew that when he went out here, preparing to lead that march, he knew that it was going to be something terrible that could possibly happen to him. He knew that. And he again, and of course, and by Dr. King being a student, of the Bible, or, follower of Jesus Christ, Of course, and that's where he got the model from. That's where he got that. In other words, Jesus was his role model.
Right.
And let me tell you something before I
I'm
gonna shut up. Now, as much as I have read the Bible and I've taught Sunday school, been on the trustee boards and sung about the songs of Zion and all the Sunday school all my life, from a kid up, taught Sunday school, director of Sunday school, sold Bibles, reading the Bible. But there's one thing I never understood, the true essence of the mission of Jesus. So keep in mind, a lot of people believe the people that were following Jesus, they were upset with Jesus because they felt like Jesus was going to lead a revolution to overthrow the Romans. Of course, that's who were oppressing the Jews in Palestine at that time. So that's what they expected of Jesus. But Jesus emphasized loving one another, taking care of each other, because Jesus knew that you cannot have a revolution or you cannot have any type of movement until the people come together. And see, that's where we are right now. We are so fragmented. We don't have any unity. We don't have a cohesive force to go up against our enemies. And see, and that's what Jesus was trying to do by continuously saying, you know, love one another, you know, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. Because he knew without that loyalty and that commitment to each other, I don't care what you do, you're not going to be successful at it. You know, and Bob Marley pretty much said the same thing. You know, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Nobody can free you. Nobody can free your mind but you.
That's right.
And see, and that's one of the things that Jesus was trying to get his followers to understand, that before they could go up against the Romans or go up against any type of oppressive power, you first of all, you got to come together as one people, one love. Let's get together and fight this holy Armageddon.
That's right. You the man, Joseph. We got two brothers added on to the show all of a sudden here. We got Daniel. That's the baby boy. How you doing tonight, Daniel?
Doing good. Brothers, how y'all doing?
Hey, Dan. How you doing, buddy?
Got Curtis on the show as well. We're going to talk to both of you guys right quick. Daniel, now we open the show with your song, man. You're the New Hope Mass Choir, Zion Hill.
What?
Yes, sir.
Wait, I missed that.
I hate you missed it. We figured that was resurrect some soul things out there, because it resurrected mine that quickly. Tell us about that song, man. Give us some insight. We know it was one of Dad's favorite songs. We knew that. But I don't understand how you went in there and took it to your choir, the New Hope Choir, and found a leader and just put that thing together right there in your own studio at home, correct?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's kind of can't even approach that song without talking about Dad a little bit.
That was
his old foot stomper and had the church rocking. Break out with it.
Now he messed around and preached about the dry bones of the valley and didn't sing that too, boy. So.
Good, grace the Lord. You can have a revival in him. But,
well.
But yeah, I finally decided to take it to the choir one day. And it was an instant hit. I could tell when we started working on it, that's going to be a good one. And when we finished it, Dad Rev would listen to it, the whole CD, he would listen to it. Mm-hmm. And when we get to that song, when that song comes on, every now and then he would say, that boy, I hope he's saved singing like that. The boy that was leading that song, he said, that boy better be saved singing like that. So
that boy was saved.
So that boy, he was singing that song, and interesting thing about it, he never met the choir. The choir, they were just dying to meet him, but he never made his way down to New Hope.
But one of the talk to us about that, Dave. How you have him get into the song like that, and the choir was—that's what I want.
Well, today's technology, you can record here and record there and bring it all together, and the people never have to meet each other. That's pretty standard these days. At the time, it wasn't. At the time, it really wasn't that standard. But when I did it, huh?
You think that boy never met the choir?
Never met the choir. They know they if he walked in the church right now, they wouldn't know him.
Hey, man, Daniel,
wait a minute,
man. I
didn't know that. I had to stop you on that one. You sharing the muse today.
Hold on, man. This is ridiculous. Hold on, man. Hold on. That I can't be. Keep talking, man. I'm just messing with you. But, yeah, I actually knew that story, but... to hear you say it again is really freaking me out.
Yeah. Like I said, I record the background at the church the way I did all of the whole song. I just recorded the background vocals and brought the lead singers into the studio. And all the other lead singers happened to be on the choir. Well, some of them, not all of them. But the girl that did evidence, she wasn't on the choir. Of course, we had Curtis song on there. He wasn't on the choir, but that guy, you know, he just, you know, he was singing like the choir was in there with him. It was amazing how he actually wasn't the guy that I had.
Listen to this, man. Now, he said the guy was
I'm moving up.
That's wild. That's amazing, Daniel. Congratulations.
Yeah, it is. The whole thing was amazing the way it came together. He's not even the guy that I had tagged to sing that song, but the guy that I picked to sing never showed up.
I was supposed to lead that one, right?
Yeah, and it never showed up. He just had to be in the studio. Man, let me sing it. Yeah, I got somebody to sing it. But whoever that was, that's the only thing.
Wow, he
was actually begging to sing, and I like, man. But he said, let me go home and practice it, man. I'm going to come back and, all right, and see what happened. He rocked it. I didn't think about the other guy no more.
Well, Daniel, I just want to say this, man. It was an amazing piece of work. It made a lot of people happy, a lot of people smile. As a matter of fact, when Kirk Franklin came to Laurinburg, the reason you guys were able to open up for him was because we presented that CD to the group that was sponsoring Kirk Franklin. And they sat down and listened to us and said, oh, yeah, let's get these guys. That's right. That's how that story went.
Yeah. Actually, the guy that he never showed up for anything actually after that. You know, everybody was wanting to hear that leader from Zion Hill, but we were kind of floundering without him showing up, so we just moved on to the next song.
And this was a real person.
Yeah, real guy.
All right.
Real fella.
All right. Hey Curtis, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, man, can y'all hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We hear you, man. How you doing, man? We're sitting here talking to Daniel about Zion Hill and that amazing album that
yeah.
it came from.
Yeah, man, I've been working off and on. I've been listening in. I do want to just thank God for you guys. Thank you. Thank you, Joseph. I heard some of Joseph's articulation of the crucifixion. To God be the glory. Thank you guys for that. Thank you, Daniel, for your, you know, Daniel just, he's just a continuous genius whose work, I'm afraid to know what's going to happen when the world hear his work. A lot of his work has just been kept in the circle of the Gateway family unions and all those things in all those circles. But there's some work that this brother has put together that the world is waiting to hear. And I just don't know what's going to happen. If the world can get a chance to hear some of the things that this brother has laid out. So thank you, and I'm glad you all used that song tonight, Zion Hill and other songs that really just brought a lot of joy to our family. When we come together, we can, like I said, whether it's a reunion or whether just going to see mama, we can just put on one of those CDs, and everybody in the house will be happy. No one will be complaining about the music. So we're just thankful to God. Hey, Rob, how you doing, man? My brother, Robert. Yeah, man, there's a lot going on here. You know, we have a lot going on as the trial continues for Derek Chauvin, of course, the racist murderer who killed George Floyd with his knee on his neck. Now we have learned it wasn't for 8 minutes and 46 seconds like we all thought, that we all just could not believe someone could have their knee on somebody's neck for that long. Another human being could put his knee on someone's neck for that long. Come to find out, it was 9 minutes and 29 seconds. Longer than we thought. Who can believe this? The trial should just have been stopped right there and said, look, man, you got to go to prison now. I mean, it's just too much.
That's what confused me. That's what confused me, Curtis. What's the trial for? Remind me, why are they having a trial? What's it?
I just can't even. It's just too much. It's too much. They're still showing the video. You got to see him suffering. Even before he gets down with the man neck on his knee, it's almost like he's the prophet. It's almost like he prophesies his death. One of the things he's saying before he even gets the police down on the ground, he tells the man, he started pleading, don't kill me. You know, it's not usual for someone to tell a police officer, don't kill me, and actually end up dead. But he said, don't kill me, like he knew. And the man would not relent. He would not stop, no matter who called him and told him, look, you know, can we send somebody out? Check it. No. They killed him right there for the whole world to see. So I don't know what his defense could be, could even imagine saying to this. This is one of those times, if I was an attorney, I would say to him, look, man, you have no defense. There's not enough money that you can pay me. You have no defense. You have to go to prison. So it's a sad commentary.
I hate to say this. I'm going to say it, but where will my thugs at? I'm just going to ask. Where will my thugs at?
Leon, I do want to say this too, man. I want to say this. And, you know, I might get some flack for saying it. But the community should not have let that man kill him. The community should have been so outraged that they put down the phone for a minute from the video and actually went up and took that police officer off that man, even if it meant the risk of being shot by the police. And that's what we were just talking about now. If you listen to what you guys were talking about, how sometimes in order to be a human being, to be civil, to be righteous, you have to risk your life to do the right thing.
And I know for a fact, if I had been there that moment, I might be dead right now. But I would not have let that police officer sit there and stand on that man, sit there on that man's knee for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. There's no way. I don't know where the thugs were. I don't know where the pastors were. I don't know where anybody was that claimed to be righteous and courageous. But if you're going to be righteous and courageous, you cannot let a police officer think he has the power to put his knee on a neighbor's neck. And when I say neighbor, I mean love thy neighbor as thyself. I'm thinking about myself down there. I am not. And that's what the community needs to hear. You cannot. You should not. Every thug should be ashamed of yourself. If you had your nine with you, I'm sorry to say it, but that's the time to use your nine. You cannot let somebody come into your community and think he is supreme enough to put his knee on the neck of your brother or your sister or your son 9 minutes and 29 seconds until he's dead. That's outrageous. I don't want to see anybody acting like they're hard and they're tough. If you were there, you have a nine, your gun, or whatever. I'm not saying you should shoot at the police, but this was an act of self-defense. They murdered this man in front of everybody. And when someone is being murdered, I don't care who's doing that murder. You have to stand up and say something. You can't just say don't do it. So I'm just, this is sickening. I mean, the more I see it, the more I get angry, not just at the police, because he's a trifling devil. I know that. But for the people who, see, Dr. King, this is, y'all have to remember this. Dr. King used to spend a lot of his time fussing at the people who are supposed to be good. You know, he talked about the racist and the oppressor and all that, yes. But when he sent his letter from Birmingham and some of these letters that he was writing and some of these speeches that he was making, act like they are so good and you're cowards and you don't stand for anything when it comes down to it. And that's why he said, this is why he said, you know, the ultimate measure of man is not where you stand during the time of comfort and convenience. Anybody can look like they're tough. Anybody can look like they're a leader. Anybody can look like they're courageous during the time of comfort and convenience. But where do you stand during the time of challenge and controversy? And this was one of those challenging, controversial times where you have a police officer who's claiming to represent the law standing in front of your face, murdering your brother. That was the time to show, and that's why you hear a lot of people, they're admitting it. They're saying, I should have done more. I should have said this. I should have said something. I should have done something. And you know what? They are absolutely right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Brother For Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. When you do call in, if you would like to speak, press the 1 key on your dial pads, and we'll be happy to bring you into the conversation. Thank you for calling in, brothers. What you got next, Robert? What we up to here, man?
You know, I was listening to Curtis, and I think the country, I know the people that were on the scene that with Mr. Floyd and this racist who murdered him. I know they are suffering from anxiety. They have guilt, and they've stated as much on the witness trial, on the stand. Some of these young people, like 9, 10, and their teenagers, they're going to be suffering from this the rest of their lives because they felt so helpless in this tragic situation. And I kind of share Curtis' sentiment. I'm afraid of what I may have done if I had been there. I mean, we can say that, I guess, from the – we don't know what we would have done if we were there, but my gut tells me I probably would have done something that I may or may not have regretted, but it's hard. Now, look at some of the guys who were there, and some of them are pretty tough, and I know there's one guy, he called the guy all kinds of names. And he is going through some anxiety. He is suffering right now because he feels like, just like Curtis said, I'm this tough guy, this bad, big bad guy that, you know, probably has some street cred. And he has to carry that burden with himself now the rest of his life, that he watched the man die before him.
Right.
I can't say with certainty, but I do know that I'm feeling some of that guilt myself. I mean, I'm way over here in Maryland. I'm feeling it. So I can imagine what these people that were there are going through. It's tragedy beyond words, really. You have to witness that and be a part of it and not be able to do anything about it.
And like you say, Robert, way over here, we're feeling this. So you can only imagine what they felt or are feeling standing there and having to experience it. It's a shame to have to experience something like that. Can't blame them for having to experience it. But we do wonder why there wasn't more done. But like I say, I can't blame them for having the experience. We have to blame, like put the blame where it should be, and that's on these guys that, sorry, got it, did it. And these cops that sat there and protected him while he did. I mean, they made sure he got the job done. Instead of saying, hey, man, get off the guy's neck, we got this. I mean, they could have done that.
Yeah.
The other cops said, hey,
yeah,
man, we got all that. You feel me?
You know the saddest thing about it.
There were five or six guys standing around him loaded up with guns. Why did he have to stand on that man's neck like that?
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, what is the trial for? Why are we wasting time
for
the trial?
Exactly. I mean, there's just nothing, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, and I'll be the first to say this. If that man is in any way, I don't care if it's one juror that caused the case to be pretty much a tie and they can't do anything, I don't care what happens. If this guy does not go to prison, America is asking to be destroyed. Destroyed, okay?
That said, Curtis.
In
Curtis,
every
that
way
said,
imaginable. Huh?
Curtis, that said, why hasn't someone stepped in and made this guy plead guilty? I mean, that's how lousy this system is. That's how sorry it is. I'm just saying that's how reckless it is. Somebody should have stepped in by now, hey, man, you need to plead guilty.
Exactly. That's what an attorney should have done.
We can't even take the risk of you being found anything but guilty.
Any attorney should have told him, look.
Back his anxiety. Why are we going to take the country back through this by putting this on TV, getting everybody all upset again? Why? And we know this is just plumb crazy.
Yeah, it's just totally ridiculous. It's just stupid, man. It's just, there is nothing that could have been done more inhumane, nothing more savagely, nothing more ruthlessly. This man is begging, and that's the sad thing about it. You ain't got a guy here that's cursing everybody out, that's escalating the situation. You don't have anybody doing that. You don't have this guy, you know, cursing all of them out, because I've seen some guys cursing police officers out, you know. This is a guy who's begging for his life. I mean, calling out for mama. You know, please. He's saying, please don't kill me. And he's like, they gonna kill me. He just gave up. He knew. I'm gonna die. And I just could not be, like I said, I thank God. And I'm gonna tell you right now, I thank God for my purpose. When I saw that, if I don't have anything else, if I don't have a penny, thank you, God, for my purpose. I think people need to find their purposes. You know, find out why you are here. You know, find your niche. Find out why God put you on this earth. Do that. Because as Dr. King said, a man who has not found something worth dying for. You're not fit to live. You're not just here to live. You're not, because you're not going to live. So you're not here for that. So that's why God and Dr. King and all of them, Jesus, all of them, you're going to die anyway. So you may as well have the courage whenever the time such as this will come at your feet to say, maybe this is my time to go, because I cannot tolerate this. They have crossed the line here, so maybe I will not die, but I must try
to resist in the name of decency, humanity. You ain't got to act like you tough. You ain't got to act like you bad and all that stuff. It means nothing. The time will come when you have to show your true colors. And that is the time right there. Someone killing someone in front of you, taking their time to kill someone. And so I think we all should take from this some of the preaching that we heard from Joseph and others who've been on this show. We have to find a purpose here and know that whenever that purpose is infringed upon to the extent that it would take out your moral compass and throw it away, then you need to say, hold on. I'm holding on to my moral compass. I'm holding on to my purpose. You have gone too far. I must challenge you, whatever the consequences may be.
Mm-hmm. This man was handcuffed on the ground. That's all they had to do. He couldn't have got back up. I mean,
nope.
They didn't have to do nothing else.
Nope. They murdered the man. They murdered the man. And this is right in line with the subject of Kyle's show tonight, Resurrection. America's police force, you need a resurrection. Unless you can stand up against stuff like this within your department, unless you can break that hold that the department, these things have on you, it's not going to work out. You can't expect
Leon,
yes, sir.
One thing that has puzzled me, of course, like Curtis opened his statement, or somebody said, where are our thugs?
Yeah.
You know, like you got these guys that go to be tough out here gang banging and shooting and killing each other.
Shooting up little kids in your neighborhood. In your town, in your town last night, all over here, even out here in Wade,
yeah.
This is a small town. Running out shooting up.
I mean, shooting up everything. You know, because he dissed me, or you know, over something stupid. But then you let some, like I said, some racist cop walk up in your neighborhood and lynch your brother right in your face. But not only the thugs that go to be tough and gang banging and shooting up everything, but not only them, where are the people in law enforcement, black people?
Yeah. Right.
Where are they? I mean, you got black folks out here walking around with guns, police officers, you got black district attorneys, you got black chiefs of police departments, judges, and all that. Why aren't they more vocal? Why aren't they saying something? Why are they sitting back just quiet? Seems like to me that all of them should have come together by now, you know, and come to say, you know, we can't perform our duties when we got people that are supposed to be enforcing the law that's breaking the law. You got a lawless society. You got police out here, you know, just doing whatever they want to do, putting themselves above the law when they're supposed to be enforcing the law. Just like a police will tell you in a minute. I mean, just like they arrest you for disobeying a police officer. You don't have to obey a police officer if he's telling you to do something that you got the right, telling you not to do something that you got the right to do. You don't have to obey him. They'll go to court and they'll try you for that, for not doing what he's saying.
Yo, you cut it short. They'll kill you for it, bro.
Huh?
They'll kill you for it, bro.
They'll kill you for it. They'll kill
yeah.
you for it.
They'll
disobeying a police officer or resisting arrest. Why are you going to be guilty of resisting arrest if you haven't done anything to be arrested for?
Leon, I'm going to tell you this, and thank you, Joseph, for saying that, because, again, one day soon, I want to have the opportunity to speak to the world about to stop killing us, universal standards for law enforcement. Leon, Joseph, Robert, Daniel, I'm telling you guys, everything these racists and these unconscious black folk, whomever keep doing this and allowing this, It does not have to be the case. It is clear. It is clear in my mind. Powerful positions are intentionally and deliberately killing black people. No question in my mind. This is not hard. This is not hard. You know, just step by step. Joseph, you know, the first thing on our list of things that the police officers shouldn't be doing, we say there should be no-knock searches. No-knock searches is the first thing that took out, well, they took out Fred Hampton in around 1965 with a no-knock search. They just went in and killed him while he was asleep. And it came all the way back to Breonna Taylor, 26-year-old black young girl, came in and killed her in her house. This stuff violates the Constitution. It violates every sensible thing. And then in this case, you got a man handcuffed. Everybody knows when you're in handcuffs, it shouldn't take anybody in law enforcement, in legal knowledge. It should be common sense. If you have a person in handcuffs, that person is now under control. He can't do but so much. He can't fight. He can't scratch. He can't kick. Well, he can kick, but the thing about it is you have him in handcuffs, so he can't resist. There is no question that this was murder, and it should be no question. It is not the police's job to punish. It is not the police's job to punish anybody. The police is only job, responsibility is, first of all, have that reason, like you were just saying, Joseph. You got to have probable cause to even talk to anybody about a crime or being suspected of a crime. What is the probable cause for you to even be talking about me? Why are you even in my house? Why are you asking me to take my go into my car and search my car? Do you have a search warrant? Is there a probable cause? So first of all, you know, whether it's the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, or the 14th Amendment, which you cannot just take people's lives, take people's property, all these different things that they're doing under the Constitution of the United States of America. And almost any time that I've ever had to go to a court regarding a police officer, they would act as if they don't even know the Constitution. And the judge would be looking at them like, you didn't know you couldn't do this? You know, they'll be asking you to do things that's not even in the Constitution whatsoever. So a lot of times they're acting that they're law enforcement when they act like they don't either know the law or don't care about the law.
Curtis, right quick, you have filed a complaint against police force. What's that about?
The complaint we filed in Graham, this is the complaint that deals with the fact that the Graham Police Department has hired this guy, Mr. Strader, who was fired from the Greensboro Police Department for committing excessive force. He was a part of several men who hogtied a black man by the name of Marcus Smith in 2018, and Marcus Smith died as a result of their excessive force. Strader also shot into the car and did a couple other things that would create or be considered excessive force. He was fired in Greensboro. The Graham Police Department hired him on March 1st, 2021. The reason why we are filing a complaint, civil rights complaint with the U.S. Department of Justice and the North Carolina Department of Justice, is because we have sense enough to know that most of these high-profile cases, the people who were murdered by the police, nine times out of ten, the policeman already has committed excessive force. Whether you even look at the trial that's going on right now, Derek Chauvin had already been complained about over 17 times. He had also shot into somebody's car and did all kinds of crazy stuff. He has numerous complaints against him. We know in the case of the little baby, Tamir Rice, I call him a baby, 12-year-old. The 12-year-old, the police officer get right out of the car and shoot this boy playing with a toy. But the police officer who did the shooting had just been hired by the Cleveland Department knowing, or at least they should have known, that the man had been dismissed from the previous department because he had emotional issues, and they had determined that he's not fit to have a gun. So our thing is, why are you going to hire a man that we know already has committed excessive force, who should have been prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law? And according to our standards, the South Carolina Solution Campaign, our standard is that anyone, no matter what color you are, if you have been found guilty of excessive force, two things should happen. You should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and you should never be allowed to work in the law enforcement anywhere within the jurisdiction of the United States of America. So, based upon our standard, we'll keep people alive. But if you allow this continuous mess to happen where a police officer can kill somebody in Greensboro and come to work in Burlington or come to work in Graham or some can kill somebody in New York and go to New Jersey and get a job, then that's why you're seeing all these killings. There are no standards. And we're saying there should be universal standards no matter what the locals decide they want, because the locals are going to make certain demands. But universally through the federal government, there should be certain things that you cannot do in law enforcement. That is, if you want to protect and serve.
Hey brother, we're gonna take a quick break, man. We got about 10 more minutes. We're gonna take a quick break. I'm right back. This is the Brother Free Radio Show. 215-383-8872 is the number to call if you want to call. Be right back.
You only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get outraged. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love that you set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and hear them crying. When you practice what you preach and what you turn the other cheek.
Don't belong. Nations dropping bombs. Chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I can ask myself, really what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret and swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Where's the truth, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
Where's the love, y'all?
We're forgiven, people dying, children hurt, and hear them crying. When you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek.
I tell you what, man, this has been such an emotional show. I just need to kind of loosen up a little bit, really. Because when I think about all of this, and think about all the resurrectioning that needs to happen throughout all of us, and think about how we are under the iron hand of, we're still under the iron hand of oppression after all these years. And it's a lot of it is in the hand of the police. But here's what I want to say. We do have the power to come out of it. We still are in our right minds, as they say, but we're closed in our right minds. Still, we'll tell me what all that means in a minute. When people say they're closed in their right mind, we still have hope. Curtis, I appreciate what you're doing, man. I'm not going to We're going to come back on next week and finish up talking about some of this. But we need to know, we need to let the community know how we need to react to these situations. But we're not going to finish that up tonight. They have to come back next week to talk about that.
Right.
Like I said, we just need to let the community know how we need to start. Like Robert, you know, we talk to Mr. Needle Puller every week. We need a code. We need to codify this and see how we should react in these types of situations. But anyway, Easter's coming up, guys. I remember when we had our Easter suits. I think I got one Easter suit all my years growing up.
Just one.
Just one, man. Yeah, I got one. I mean, you know that big picture we took? That picture we took with all of us and like the Adams family. Yeah, I had my Easter suit on then.
Then Pop pick up the Charlotte man, the battle suits.
Yep, Robert Hall.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wasn't that something?
Yeah.
Robert Hall.
What do you say, Joseph?
It's a lot to ask. So
Robert Hall and Charlotte, if y'all went.
We went where?
Robert Hall. That was the name of the store in Charlotte called Robert Hall.
What got in the rail, man, made him do that?
Huh?
Perez was making money then.
That's what I was saying. He must have been doing that insurance money back then.
When he started doing that insurance. But you know, but...
those weren't cheap suits, man. Those weren't cheap suits Pop bought us either.
You know, I bought my own. I bought mine and I bought Daniel's.
Joe's riding the school bus, driving. He was driving. He was wearing Sons of Belt pants on driving the bus and all kinds of
things. Sons of Belt.
He was the man. Yes. What is it? Zanzibel or Sansbel? Zanzibel, whatever.
Yeah, Zanzibel.
Hey, let me give you guys, let me tell you exactly what Sansbel means. Sans is actually French for mean without. So Sansbel is without belt. That means didn't have the belt boots.
Robert, now you've always been the smart one, man. I'll tell y'all about the experience I had in pre-tackle. Now, Robert came over there at Sansbel. Now, who else would have known that but Robert? Anyway, I had a pre-calculus. Robert and I went to class together, and I was flunking. And I went to the instructor. I told him, I said, man, I need a tutor. Now, Robert was in the class with me, but, you know, me and Robert, you know, we didn't, I didn't want Robert to tutor me. I really didn't even want him to know I was failing. So I went to the instructor. He was a German guy. And I said, Dr. Baker, I need a tutor. He said, well, who do you know? I said, my brother's in the class. He said, who's your brother? He said, who's your brother? I said, Robert. He said, Robert? Robert's your brother? He looked at me like I was, where did you come from, dude? Did y'all come out the same egg or what? I mean, I don't know.
We all have our smarts in our own areas. That's all I can say.
Yeah, the guy really made me feel bad. After that, I just go ahead and flunk the class. Whatever. I passed it 3 years later.
That's funny. Nah, man, you're playing smart. You know you smart. Everybody's smart in their own way.
Yeah, like Daddy used to say, he'd see somebody about a little off. Yeah. They got plenty of sense of their kind.
Then they own Canada.
You got to find your kind. See, that's what I was saying earlier. You got to find your kind.
That's right. You got to find your kind.
And Pop, but y'all know Pop had a lot of quotes. I remember one day we were talking about our Aunt Thelma. You know, she was used to dip stuff and. You know, she struggled in her, you know, years, and you know, and as an adult, you know, I look back on those days and say, shame on me. But Pop
right.
put it in perspective. He said, don't ever disown your family or make fun of anybody. He said, one day somebody's gonna come along and say, I'm gonna give $50 to everybody she's the honor of, and if you disown her, you're not gonna get that $50. Probably had a way of putting things in perspective.
You put that in perspective. I know I shut up after that.
Yeah. I was telling one of Daddy's jokes Sunday. But anyway, I won't get into it, but I do want to just reiterate, Leon, I know one time you said something about the dry bones of the valley, and I do think we probably need to think about that, because I think God is calling on the dry bones to rise up and connect. He's calling on that body, and I think that's what this trial is doing. It's really beyond us. Really, we would just say it's not worth having this trial. But I think God is using this trial to say, and especially as it leads on up to the assassination of Dr. King, one of the greatest that we've seen in our day, I think this all is coming together, culminating into something that should cause the dry bones to rise up.
Amen, brother. Amen. Like I say, I know only one preacher that could have messed that sermon up. I'm not going to call his name. He's no longer with us. But he preached the dry bones sermon, man, you can get him. But you're right, Curtis. God is, everything's intentional. You have to remember. You have to remember all things are intentional. Even if they're frustrating to you, they seem like it's unnecessary. It's intentional.
All things work together for good for those who love God. Work together for good. No matter how bad it is, it might be bad so that you can see, so that God or Jesus can give sight to the blind. But
I mean,
things are working together for good.
People need to see that there was somebody out here that would kill you right in your face, kill somebody in your neighborhood right in your face. They would do it right in your face. I mean, they would kill your neighbor right in your face.
I mean, take their time. This is the key here. Like even the prosecution has already said, this is not a case where somebody flew off the handle here. This guy took his time. Right where you can see it. Yeah, so for us to have that in our communities means that we must come together. The rebuilding of the village that we talked about, that vision of rebuilding the village where everybody cares about everybody in the village, where everybody sees every child as their own, that is also a message coming out of this. That should have been seen as your son, your brother, everybody's brother, son, daddy, and you just can't let that type of stuff happen. No matter whether it's a black person doing it or a white one. I mean, no, you just can't. We just can't let this happen. You know, no more.
Chris, and I will say that I'm going to close by saying this right here, man. One of the things that inspired this topic for tonight was you, actually, and this foolishness that's going on with the that's a whole new show. I'm not going to get into it, but I just want to lay this out here. And as they say on Facebook, a lot of people say on Facebook, I'm going to say this and I'm going to leave it right here. This foolishness going on with the North Carolina NAACP. And that's one of the things that brought me to this thing, because it's a resurrection on the rise, on the horizon. There's a resurrection on the horizon. And
Lord of mercy.
It's just, we just got to come together as a people and stop the tomfoolery that's actually going on in our own circles in our own race.
Lord of mercy.
That's the biggest.
Please, God.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Brother Career Radio Show. We'll be back next Wednesday.
Please, Jesus.
And we're going to have some live stuff.
Please, Jesus.
But there's too much to talk about, not to talk. So the brothers are going to be back next week. And we look forward to hearing from each and every one of you. I'm going to say, let's put it all together on our way out, guys. We've got to put this all together. God bless you, brother. Thank you, mister. Appreciate you. Come back next week. Come on again, please. Let's put it together, man.
Hey, brother. Hey, brother. God bless you.
Hey. Let's put it all together.
and that's one of my favorite songs.
I knew it, man. I knew it. I'm feeling you today, bro.
Man. Man, I love them boys when they do that.
Can tell me, just touching my cheeks, my lips are meant to kiss you. Your lips and my lips, what more is there to say?
It was the community as well. Yeah. We really have to take something to do to address this, these forces of death. I know this guy's talking about him and him. I'm talking about the community at large.
Do what the white man do. You think you can go and